Ray, producer of The Mike Malloy Show, wishing all of you a very happy holiday season and a peaceful new year.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Widespread violence erupted in Iraq yesterday in the wake of the capture of former dictator Saddam Hussein. The sharply escalated attacks could indicate that the war in Iraq could be taking even more of a deadly turn. Hussein loyalists rioted in Baghdad, ambushed a U.S. patrol in Samarra, stormed the office of a U.S.-backed mayor in Fallujah, and battled American troops in Ramadi as cities in the Sunni Triangle region seethed over the ex-dictator's capture. As soldiers fought off angry protesters and guerrilla attacks Monday night and Tuesday, the 4th Infantry Division said it had snared a leader of the insurgency and 78 other people in a raid north of Baghdad, not far from where Saddam was captured 3 days ago. A roadside bomb wounded 3 American soldiers in Saddam's hometown of Tikrit, and a pro-Saddam demonstration in the northern city of Mosul ended in violence, with a policeman killed and a second injured. London's independent newspaper reports that as many as 18 Iraqi civilians were killed by American troops on Tuesday. Correspondent Robert Fisk said the troops shot indiscriminately into crowds of pro-Saddam demonstrators in the city of Ramadi, and 8 were killed in Samarra. Fisk reports that occupation security documents, not released to the public, report 30 attacks on U.S. forces in the past 24 hours. A truck loaded with explosives rammed into a small bus and exploded early Wednesday in Baghdad, killing at least 10 people, an Iraqi deputy minister said. A police officer put the toll at 22. The blast occurred at 5 a.m. in the capital's Al-Bayah district. 2 cars nearby were destroyed in the blast. Iraq's deputy interior minister said 10 people were killed, but a policeman at the scene put the total at 22 and said the victims included 18 passengers on the bus. Connecticut Governor John Rowland vowed again Wednesday to stay in office despite the furor over his admission that he took gifts from employees and state contractors. In a speech in Middlesex, Rowland apologized again for what he said were failures on his part. Once a rising star in Republican politics, Rowland is now fending off talk of impeachment and questions about his ethics, honesty, and ability to govern. More after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
Bruce Springsteen has a friend at the San Diego Zoo. Almost 4 months after his birth, a male panda born in captivity at the zoo was named on Tuesday Mei Sheng, or born in the USA in English. Mei Sheng was born on August 19th, but by Chinese tradition, baby pandas are not named until 100 days after their birth. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
The powers that be, both political and corporate, are expert at fooling themselves while mistakenly thinking that they're also fooling us. The latest culprits in this fool's game are the barons of cable television. Lobbyists for such outfits as Time Warner, Cablevision, and Cox rammed a deregulation law through Congress in 1997 that allows them to set their own rates. Trust us, they said at the time, promising that the elixir of unregulated competition would magically cause our monthly cable charges to fall. Like rubes at their first medicine show, Congress swallowed this tonic of lies, and now you and I are stuck with an unregulated cable TV monopoly in each of our towns that, far from lowering our rates, has jacked up our monthly bills by 40% in just 6 years. Well, yes, say the cable giants, but we now give you more channels than before. Who do they think they're fooling? Yes, we get more channels, but they show the same old junk, including repeats of repeats and dozens of channels we never requested and never watch. Indeed, we pay for about 63 channels, but mostly watch about 8. Well, yes, say the giants again, still believing they're fooling us, but the fees we pay for programming are up too, so we're being forced to raise our rates. Hey, Flim Flam Man, in many cases you are the programmer. For example, Time Warner owns CNN, TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network, and many others, so it's paying itself for the higher program costs. Besides, the cost of all the programs you get on cable is only about $7 of your monthly cable bill, which now averages nearly $37. Well, yes, say the giants, trying one more trick on us, but we need higher rates to survive. Survive? Your profit margins are running above 30%, about 3 times the average of other industries. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight this tomfoolery, call Consumers Union, 202-462-6262.
Xie xie is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Fan ji la is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fan ji la.
You know everything. Xie xie. I should have watched MSNBC yesterday.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need is a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome, friends. Oh, magnetic resonance imaging. Have you seen this? MR, you know what an MRI is. It's one of these, they put you in this giant electromagnet. And it aligns all the iron particles in your hemoglobin and in your cells to whatever it defines as magnetic north, and that way it can figure out where what's going on inside your brain and what's and your body, of course. And now they're applying MRIs to brains to identify, and I quote, to identify patterns of brain activity that reveal how a consumer is actually evaluating a product, object, or advertisement. It's Clinton D. Kiltz, who is an expert in addiction. He previously did research on, quote, drug craving induced by mental imagery. How to create drug craving in people by showing them pictures. He's now heading up a company called Thought Sciences, a subsidiary of Bright House, an advertising agency whose clients include Coca-Cola, Pepperidge Farms, Kmart, and Home Depot. And Dr. Kiltz is now using here this a number of prominent psychologists have written Emory University President James Wagner, asking him to stop the experiments. Their letter read in part, universities exist to free the mind and enlighten it. They do not exist to find new ways to subjugate the mind and manipulate it for commercial gain. Is Dr. Kiltz now using his knowledge of addiction to sell products such as Coke? Is he working on mental mapping to induce product cravings through the use of product-related scenes? Well, yes, apparently. So far, this new company, they're putting people in these MRIs. And they're doing these, they're looking inside their brains as they run commercials to find out what triggers those parts of the brain that are below the radar screen of consciousness. What evokes emotional response that is not mediated by thought? So it's just bang. You have no control over your response to this ad. That's what they're producing. So far, the company has one client, which it refuses to identify. I wonder if it's George W. Bush. Wouldn't that be interesting? You'll recall his father hired some people who were experts in neurolinguistic programming, which was the state of the art of psychological warfare back then. And they came up with a Willie Horton ad, which does what's called a swish in NLP.
which binds one thing to another in a person's brain. So they show pictures of Willie Horton, show pictures of Michael Dukakis. Willie Horton, Michael Dukakis. Willie Horton, Michael Dukakis. And surprise, surprise. Interesting. Welcome to our program. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We are broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on terrestrial radio stations on the Sirius satellite stream 145, beaming all over the planet on various internet radio stations. RadioPower.org has logged in regular listeners in more than 91 countries now. RadioPower.org, by the way, is a more or less volunteer-run organization. Shelby's running this thing and peddling as fast as she can, and it's supported by donations from its listeners. So if you are listening to the program on RadioPower.org on the internet, I encourage you to help out, as they say in public radio. Anyhow, and also carried on Live365.com and IEAmericaRadio.com and various other spots around the internet. We have archives from WhiteRoseSociety.org, and you can find all of that by going to TomHartman.com, where you'll also find a new archive. I think we have over 100 hours of audio clips from this program, from the last year of this program, that you can listen to, organized by category, by a brilliant and thoughtful fellow down in Florida, Mike Toth. And great job. And you can also find a link there to our chat room, where right now you will meet Europello and One Big Adwolf and Radine and Rigglepo and SmileMaker999 and Kevin Tahoe and Trisha and on it goes. So feel free to drop into the chat room if you'd like. At the press conference yesterday, this actually was the day before yesterday, at his press conference day before yesterday, President Bush was asked what charges that he had received, was asked about the charges that he had received warnings prior to the September 11 attacks that a terrorist incident was imminent. Let me just say this instead of trying to read it here. The word is out. And, of course, Howard Dean was attacked for implying that George W. Bush had some sort of advance warning of 9/11. And let me digress just for a moment. It completely blows my mind, and I'm going to come back to this later on. It just completely blows my mind every time I hear George Bush refer to Iraq as having something to do with the war on terror. Yes, we are winning the war on terror. There are no terror, at least there weren't when we attacked, there were no terrorists in Iraq who had anything to do with us. And he admitted this. You don't hear that soundbite anymore on TV where he said, no, there is no connection between Saddam Hussein and 9/11. But he said it. It is true. So the war on terror has been set aside to have a war on Iraq to seize its oil fields and enrich Halliburton. Let's just be upfront about this. So anyhow, back to the real war on terror, which itself is a weird misnomer. It really should be the attempt to catch a criminal or a criminal enterprise, this Islamic mafia that Osama bin Laden has put together. Anyhow, he was asked at this press conference day before yesterday whether or not he had any warnings that Osama might actually hijack an airplane and run it into the World Trade Center, something like that. And he said it was an absurd insinuation. And back in May of 2002, Condoleezza Rice had said something similar. She said, and I quote, "No one predicted that they would try to use an airplane as a missile, a hijacked airplane," end quote. And I remember seeing that. It was on CBS News. The problem for the president and the administration, this is a real problem. I mean, this is one of the reasons I'm convinced why they're stonewalling the 9/11 investigation, refusing to turn over papers, is because the 9/11 Commission wants to see his presidential briefing from August 6th, 2001. He gets this briefing, and suddenly he goes on the longest presidential vacation in the history of the presidency and just doesn't go back to Washington, D.C. He's down in Florida when 9/11 happens. He gets this thing on August 6th, and suddenly John Ashcroft starts flying around on a private chartered jet, refuses to fly in commercial aircraft. All of a sudden, this is a real problem. Because as ABC News reported in May of 2002, quote, this from the ABC News on May 16th, 2002, quote, White House officials acknowledge that U.S. intelligence officials informed President Bush weeks before the September 11 attacks that Osama bin Laden's terrorist network might try to hijack American planes, end quote. As Condoleezza Rice said in a hastily called press conference to spin these revelations, the president specifically received an analytic report on August 6th of 2001 at his Crawford mansion that, quote, talked about Osama bin Laden's methods of operations and, quote, mentioned hijacking, end quote. According to Reuters, that report was congruent with, quote, intelligence since 1998 that said followers of bin Laden were planning to strike U.S. targets with hijacked U.S. airplanes, end quote. While the administration claims that the president's pre-9/11 warning was actually not a warning, when is a warning not a warning? The threat was specific enough for Attorney General John Ashcroft to stop flying commercial airplanes. While no warning was issued for the general public, Ashcroft was flying exclusively by leased jet instead of commercial airlines because of an official, quote, threat assessment by the FBI, end quote. This the Daily Mislead from misleader.org. Every day, another one from the Bush administration. Another one. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Pat, a trucker's on the line. Hey, Pat, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Pat.
I first want to tell you this is the first time I'm talking to you, and I really first want to congratulate you on all your success. And tell you that I'm very much in awe of you, and I very much appreciate you and respect you. What I'd like to say is that in this modern day and time, we have cameras in courtrooms. I want to see Saddam Hussein brought before the public and have his say, and also President Bush would just love to see Saddam Hussein put to death and nobody ever hear a word that man ever has to say. As far as I know, I've only heard that he's a tyrant and that he's a horrible man and that he's committed horrible atrocities against humankind. That's probably very true. But I think he should be brought in front of the public, the Iraqis and the Americans, and have his say. I think that Bush is up to no good. I think all his cabinet and administration is up to no good. And right beside Saddam Hussein, I want Noriega to stand there and have his day, too, and have to see what he has to say, too. Thank you very much, Mr. Hartman.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for calling, Pat. Well said. I would love to hear what Noriega has to say, too, but they've got him in solitary confinement lockdown down in Florida. They're not going to let him peep about his affiliations with previous Republican administration and probably Democratic administrations as well. And, this is going to be the stealth weapon of the Bush 2004 political presidential campaign. And it's kind of ironic. You know, and unfortunately, irony is usually missed or lost on the American public. But here, you know, we attacked Saddam Hussein because we said he posed an imminent threat to the United States. Turns out he didn't. What amazed me was all these news commentators asking the question, what's this going to do to Howard Dean, instead of asking the question, okay, now we've got Saddam, where are the weapons of mass destruction? Why weren't they asking that question? Why wasn't that the first thing off the lips of every news commentator? Well, okay, we just lost the lives of over 400 Americans. Oh, a couple of thousand of them have lost legs and arms and ears and eyes. Between 10 and 20,000 Iraqi civilians have died, not to mention the soldiers. All these deaths, all these injuries, all these children dead, because this guy had weapons of mass destruction, and now we've got him. Are we going to find the weapons? And then at the same time, you've got, okay, let's say Saddam actually killed 1 million people. Most people figure it's 250,000, but let's say he killed 1 million. Last week, George W.'s in the White House with one of the dictators of China that has killed at least in the last 10, 15 years, 3 million people. They killed 2 million people just in Tibet. Oh, but they're our buddies. As Saddam was once. It's all very strange. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
I had a bad headache. I tried Advil Liquid Gels. They work faster than Tylenol.
I needed stronger medicine, and Advil Liquid Gels get that medicine to my headache faster.
I get better relief with Advil Liquid Gels.
Every day, more people are choosing Advil Liquid Gels to relieve tough headache pain. Advil has these advanced capsules with liquid medicine inside to rush relief where you need it. Proven faster, stronger, better than Tylenol.
Now, every time I get a tough headache, I choose Advil Liquid Gels.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Tune into IE America Radio Network weekdays for the best in progressive talk radio. The Tom Hartman Show.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. You're listening to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show.
Family Talk.
This is Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera.
The All-American Talk Radio Show.
All-American Talk Radio with Peter B. Collins.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I know I have a reputation of being fiery, hard-edged, passionate, outspoken, opinionated, and sometimes explosive. And that reputation is well-deserved because I am. I'm a liberal with a microphone, and that makes me dangerous.
For more information on these shows and other shows, or to listen live, visit us on the web at ieamericaradio.com.
Hi, this is Suzanne Gowardy.
I'm El Bracciotti, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey.
This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud.
This is Steve Damschutter.
This is Shaw Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger.
From our family, cheers. Have a
happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too cute?
I like Santa Claus.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, though I
Yes, let's. We got to stick together. You know, stand by me. Well, not just me. We need to stick together on this day 156 of the search for the traitor who committed treason in the White House, the senior administration official who outed a CIA agent.
And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah. Day 310 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 796 in the search for the person who liked to send anthrax to Democrats considering the Patriot Act. And day 819 in the search for Osama bin Laden. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Eric in Nevada has some thoughts or question or comment or whatever it may be. Hey, Eric, welcome to the program. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, did you watch that Diane Sawyer interview last night?
I didn't. I confess I did not even know it was going to be happening. I must have disconnected someplace.
Okay.
Tell me about it.
I heard it. I didn't watch it, but I heard that on that show, Bush said something to the effect, I shouldn't speculate, but he said something to the effect that it's not in his nature to analyze things. And I'm just wondering, I mean, if Kennedy didn't analyze things during the Cuban Missile Crisis, I mean, what would have happened there? I mean,
yeah.
I don't understand that.
Well, Bush, and this is actually, I think, for some people, part of his appeal, is that he's not a particularly thoughtful or analytical guy. He talks about how he doesn't read newspapers. He doesn't think deeply about things. And some people think that that's a virtue. It's a little scary that he believes that he was put there by God and that he's absolutely everything he does is the will of God. And therefore, he can make no mistakes. I mean, that's what the popes used to believe.
Yeah.
When they led the Western world into the Crusades, and it's a scary, scary thing. But
yeah, that scares the hell out of me. To tell you the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's all. I was just wondering if you'd watched that and if you had any comments on that.
No, I didn't. I'm sorry, Eric. But thanks for the call. Here's George W. On the aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln.
In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Yes, we have prevailed. And
the Battle of Iraq is one victory in a war on terror.
Now that's... hang on just a second there. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Iraq has had nothing to do with terrorism that we've had any problem with. Saddam was paying a $25,000 reward or whatever you want to call it. He called it, payment for loss of income or something, to suicide bombers in Israel. And that's it. I mean, and even that is, it's kind of shaky how real that was and whether anybody ever actually got any money from him. But that's as close, that's the only connection that anybody's been able to come up with, although they drag it out every week. But the Battle of Iraq was not the war on terrorism. It was the war on Iraq. It was a war on the nation that has the second largest, perhaps the first largest, supply of oil in the world. Not terrorism.
The Battle of Iraq is one victory in a war on terror.
No.
That began on September the 11th, 2001.
No, actually, it was back in 1998 when the Project for New American Century, over the signature of Dick Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, and others, and Rumsfeld, wrote a letter to Bill Clinton, which is still on their website, newamericancentury.org, wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq.
And still goes on.
Yeah.
That terrible morning, 19 evil men.
None Iraqis.
Shock troops.
Not a single one from Iraq.
Gave America and the civilized world a glimpse of their ambitions.
Yeah, the shock troops of a hateful ideology, which Saddam was suppressing in Iraq. Now, this isn't to say Saddam was a good guy. Thank God he's gone. But it is not the war on terror. It is not the war on terror. That's your mantra. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. I hope you have a happy and peaceful holiday season.
Climate change is more than a global environmental issue. It's also a matter of justice, according to a Michigan scholar. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Environmental problems hit harder at the poor and people of color. University of Michigan social scientist Bunyan Bryant says global climate change might become the greatest cause of environmental injustice.
That's going to affect a lot of people. It's going to affect a lot of people in this country because people will be migrating from coastal areas that's flooded out. In other areas, there'll be droughts. Tropical diseases will be moving north. People will be moving across geopolitical boundaries across the world. It's going to cause regional conflicts. And so the greatest environmental justice of it all is global warming.
Bryant says the pattern will be the same across the planet with coastal areas and politically unstable nations most affected by global warming. Bryant claims the United States, the world's biggest emitter of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, is committing an act of environmental racism.
Environmental racism is an extension of racism. It has to do with various decisions and policies and rules and regulations that result in the disproportionate impact of environmental hazards on people of color.
Bryant says developing countries are too poor to deal with the droughts, floods, and rising sea levels that could result from climate change.
We have to remember that there are people in this world that are in desperate need. I mean, they can just barely eke out a living.
Bryant says it's a form of injustice for the United States to create pollution that places a greater burden on the world's poorest people. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
Handy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware, John Seip from United Marketing Force, Jay Brentlinger from Orban, and, of course, Danny Lipford from today's Homeowner Television Show, take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years, so join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Got to go back. We got to go back. Got to go back. Got to go back. For the healing.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We are broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. And, boy, strange things going on in Washington, D.C. and Iraq. Mark LaPersio is the father of a young man who is a soldier in Iraq right now. And he just returned from a fact-finding trip to Iraq along with a group of folks. Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing? It's Mike, by the way.
Mike, okay.
That matters that much.
Oh, there it is. I'm sorry. I need to strengthen my glasses. Thank you, Mike. Mike, tell us, first of all, who you went with and what the purpose of this trip was.
We went with a group called Global Exchange, and I guess everybody had their own purpose. My particular reason for going was that my son is stationed in Iraq, and I've been watching the progress of the war since the very beginning, and just didn't feel like we were making that much progress. You know, the attacks seemed more violent, and they just didn't seem to stop. And it was just an incredible opportunity for me to get a very different perspective by talking to everyday Iraqi people, and just getting a feel for whether they felt the war was, the United States was making progress, whether they believed in our goals, and just to get a firsthand account.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go through what you learned while you were there. This sounds fascinating. You were there 8 days. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you met with the Paul Bremer, the head of the coalition, the Provisional Coalition Authority or coalition, and you met with some of the let's see here. I got a note here. The president of the council, President Abdulaziz Al-Hakim of the Governing Council.
Correct.
And
a couple other members of the council as well. And, you know, even more important than that, we dressed in civilian clothes and we went in unmarked cars and we just went into the neighborhoods. We went everywhere. We met with doctors at two different hospitals. We met with educators at three different schools. We met with various organizations that were stationed in the Human Rights Center, downtown Baghdad, probably 20 different civic groups. You know, we'd walk up and down the streets talking to people waiting in gas lines, and, met with a group.
You know, a question that occurred to me, Mark, the other day, somebody would just come back. Oh, it was, in fact, it was on Crossfire. They were interviewing Tucker Carlson, who's over in Iraq right now, and they said, you know, what do you see? And he talked about the gas lines, and one of the questions was, how are people responding to the gas lines? So the question in my mind is, why gas lines? Did you ever figure out why? Is it because Halliburton isn't delivering enough gas, or is it really true that so many more automobiles have suddenly been imported into Iraq?
I don't think that's the case, since there's just vast unemployment in Iraq.
Millions of brand new cars?
No, I didn't see any brand new cars. I didn't see hardly. I don't think I saw a brand new car. But, I don't know. I mean, I from what I understand, I'm understanding is that there's been some sabotage, and they're just having trouble getting supplies to Iraq. I mean, when we were driving on the highway from Amman, Jordan to Baghdad, we saw a couple of tankers that were blown up on the side of the road, and I know that there's been some problems in the pipeline, and, you know, I don't know. It's a mystery to me. I don't really understand it, but, regardless of the reason, there's a tremendous frustration. You can imagine what people are talking about waiting in a 7-mile gas line. You know, it takes all day long, oftentimes, to get a tank of gas, and frustration's just incredible.
It can take a day and a night to get a tank of gas, can it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 People start at 3 o'clock in the morning, and, it's
so, George Bush and his buddies are promoting this as part of the, Dick Cheney, in fact, called it the Central Front on the War on Terror. And a comment which a number of military folks have really gone after. Anthony Cordesman, national security military intelligence expert for the Center for Strategic and International Studies, says there is no evidence of activity by extremist terror groups affiliated with al-Qaeda in Iraq. Militarily, their statements are almost absurd. But is there a sense there in Iraq among the people there and among our soldiers that you talk to that this has something to do with 9/11 and the war on terror?
Not really, no. I mean, they, no one I know or no one I met or talked to had any, they didn't sense any presence of al-Qaeda at all. They're not really sure, even they're not sure where the attacks are coming from. You know, there probably is a foreign element there. As a matter of fact, when we drove over the borders are wide open. They didn't check our baggage. They didn't check our cars. They weren't checking semi-trucks rolling over the border, incredibly. I don't know why.
And the borders are fairly, I mean, there's just a few roads, aren't there?
Came in on a big double-lane highway, and, there were no American troops. There's some Iraqi guys stamping passports, and off you go, which I thought was just, you'd think that would be a pretty high priority to check what's coming into the country. But,
Well, you came in from Jordan, didn't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe they figured Jordan is not, well, it's another dictatorship in the Middle East. I mean, it's, anyway. So you were saying.
Yeah, the, you know, my only feeling is that there's so much frustration throughout. You know, Baghdad was my core of experience. We went to Fallujah for an afternoon to visit my son, but for the most part, we spent our time in Baghdad. And you know, the infrastructure is so wrecked, and people are so frustrated that my fear is that regardless of Al Qaeda or whatever kind of terrorist foreign element there are, people are becoming more and more frustrated. The locals are becoming more frustrated too, and I think that that's going to breed, if we don't make some pretty quick changes over there, that's going to breed more and more attacks.
Yeah, we're talking to Mark LaPersio, who just got back from Iraq. His son is one of the soldiers in the United States Army stationed in Iraq. And Mark, it occurs to me that if this administration had found even one person associated with al-Qaeda in Iraq, that person would be on the front page on the front cover of Time magazine. They'd say, see, here's an al-Qaeda person. We finally found one. But you know, we haven't seen any thing like that. But it was your sense that most of this insurrection is a homegrown thing?
Yes, that would be, yeah. I I don't know for sure, but I think that, I think it's just unrest within the population right now and a resentment that, they're being occupied and you know, we've gone in there and just wrecked their country. And we've made a lot of promises in the last 8 months, and things just haven't gotten better. And, you can visualize what would happen with us if someone took away our clean water and took away our gasoline and, you know, took the drugs out of our hospitals and rolled tanks up and down our streets pointing high caliber weapons at us. We're going to feel violated. We're going to retaliate.
We're going to be reactive. Mike, I'm sorry I called you Mark again. We're just speaking with Mike LaPersio, the father of a son in Iraq, and who just visited Iraq on a trip with Global Exchange. GlobalExchange.org is their website. Did you see any reconstruction? We're spending billions there rebuilding. Was any of it visible?
No. Yeah, as a matter of fact, before we went, the organizer, Medea Benjamin, asked a couple of the big companies, Halliburton, Bechtel, if they would provide a list of where the money is, you know, what projects have been completed or in progress. And she couldn't get a response. She asked several times, several different people, because we wanted to visit that. We wanted to see the works in progress. And I guess
your tax dollars at work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We've spent $2 billion, and, you know, we just, you know, visited places at random. We couldn't find any evidence of it at all. It's just non-existent. One school we went to, they got $700, and the school had no lights, no heat, no windows. They were sharing like two books. I mean, it just ridiculous. And
but Mike, the Pentagon is setting up its own television network over there so that 24 hours a day they can beam news clips out for the news, to get past the news filter, so that the news media of the United States can have real news from Iraq. And they're telling us that, you know, they're building hospitals and schools and there's all these success stories. You didn't see those?
I don't know why they don't show them. I mean, give us the addresses. We'd love to see them. Yeah, we didn't see them at all. I mean, I think instead of building a TV network, they ought to build, you know, four or five temporary gas stations in central Baghdad or something. I mean, they need to do something tangible that the population can see if they're really sincere about rebuilding. I know they are. I know that they want to do the job. It just seems like there's this pervading sense of mismanagement. It just, you know, people don't really know what's going on, and you know, if it were
it's also got to be really scary with people shooting at you all the time. When, you know, if you're trying to, if I was a contractor and my job was to rebuild a school, and I knew that you know, if you look like an American, they're likely to shoot at you, I'd be a little reluctant to be building that school right now.
You know, I guess so, except for the fact that, you know, when you have a military uniform on and a flak jacket and a helmet and a machine gun, those are the guys who are getting shot at. You know, we went around for days and walked the streets. We wore these white vests that said peace in Arabic across the front of them. We were presenting ourselves as targets, basically. People were so warm and friendly. They welcomed us into their homes. Half-hour meetings turned into two-hour meetings. People just couldn't, you know, get enough of talking to us. And, you know, I found someone willing to listen. And I didn't feel, maybe we were just lucky, but I didn't feel threatened at all. People were very warm and friendly because they knew what intention we had. They knew that we were there to help.
Mike, did you see, again, the two stories that we get. One story is that the U.S. military is making friends and winning the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people, and they're interacting with them. And the other story is that they've walled themselves off into these compounds with razor wire and big walls and lots of guns, and they only go out to do very specific expeditions. Which of those is the case?
The latter, by far. I mean, it's so vividly clear. You know, I talked to Iraqis that said when the troops first got there, there was a lot of intermingling and guys would walk up and down the streets, and there was a lot of, you know, one-on-one with the military and the population. But now it's incredibly isolated. You know, the guys are strictly behind concrete barriers and barbed wire, and we had an experience of going into the green zone and just the starkness of going through the decrepit city. And going through that concrete barrier into the lushness of the government headquarters, which was an area the size of Central Park, with beautiful marble buildings and sumptuous buffet lunches. I mean, it was so stark, it was so stark in contrast. Guys in suits and briefcases. I'm thinking, you guys just—they're not connected. They don't have a connection with what's going on outside that concrete wall.
Well, it's sort of like the wealthy talk show host getting out of his limousine in Manhattan and not noticing what's going on in the rest of the city.
Yeah, exactly. It's just that kind of thing, and the population knows this. I mean, they see that concrete wall, they see what's beyond it, and I'm not passing judgment. I'm simply reporting that they're calling them the new Saddam. They're calling us the new Saddam. We're residing in his palace. You know, we come and go, and their lives aren't improving, and It's unnerving. It's really disturbing.
Yeah. So, Mike LaPersia, what do you think we should do?
They gave us several. I mean, there's a lot of different opinions. You know, half the people told us get out now. You know, we can rebuild this ourselves. But the more rational group really said, you know, what you ought to do is make a massive effort to rebuild our police force. Pay these guys more money. Get them trained, get them out on the streets, and stop patrolling the streets, because it's an inflammatory thing to see our troops with tanks rolling up and down the streets.
Well, aren't we doing that?
No. Well, you know, we're trying to, but they defect as fast as we train them. And
because they're afraid for their lives.
Sure, they are. Yeah, they're afraid. Yeah. They're getting killed. So, you know, we're paying them like $100 a month, $120, and it's just not enough money. You know, we're not picking the right people. Whatever. I don't know, but we've got to get Iraqi police force back on the streets, number one, and we need to make some tangible improvements in their lifestyle. We've got to do a better job making their lives a little more livable.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. We're speaking with Mike LaPersia, who's just back from Iraq. Leland in Santa Fe is on the line. He has a question. Hey, Leland, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. I was really impressed with Global Exchange and the work that you guys are doing. I feel like what you're saying really is that, or what I'm seeing really is that the government is talking a lot about Al-Qaeda, and it appears to me that there's mostly a propaganda that Al-Qaeda has anything to do with what's going on in Iraq. And if you put yourself in their position, it seems clear to me that any resistance in Iraq is likely to be homegrown, because if there was ever a government takeover of the United States of America, all the resistance here would be homegrown.
Yeah, no matter whether we like George Bush or not, we'd be out there, trying to get him released or whatever. Thanks for the comment, Leland. You already pretty much addressed that, Mike, I think.
I think it'd be pretty clear if you could possibly imagine that kind of scenario happening here, how we would react. You just know that at least a third of us would be grabbing the guns and trying to retaliate.
If Mexico invaded and they took George Bush captive, even Democrats would be trying to get him out.
Absolutely, sure.
Yeah. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Paul in Detroit has a comment. Paul, we've only got about a minute and a half left here. Make it quick.
Very quick. Hello, Mike and Tom. In yesterday's New York Times, Paul Krugman reported that the NBC News had received reports from the Pentagon about Halliburton's Kellogg, Brown & Root and the way they were operating the mess halls for our military in Iraq. Blood on the floors of refrigerators, dirty pans, dirty grills, dirty salad bars, rotting meat and vegetables, and that Halliburton has yet to do anything about it as of the October report.
Yeah. Did you see evidence of that while you were there, Mike?
No, I didn't. But one of the things that the Iraqis told us, you know, unanimously was that, why are we hiring these big American companies to come in and do work that we can do? There's
right.
contractors, engineers, architects. There's very sophisticated and well-trained, educated people in Iraq that are unemployed.
Yeah, they had built a country before we got there.
Sure, it was a pretty sophisticated country at some point, and they still are. And they're unemployed while we're just.
Well, the problem is that the Iraqi people don't give campaign contributions to the Bush administration.
There you go.
I mean, you know, that's the bottom line. Somebody ought to set them straight. Mike, if you can hang on, we got a break here. And when we come back from the break, Sarah in Santa Fe's got a quick question for you, and then we'll wrap this up.
Sure.
Speaking with Mike LaPersio, just back from Iraq with Global Exchange, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen. For the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, sildenafil citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals. And you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
The
Tom Hartman Show.
We have Bob in Texas. It's called Bob. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, it's just wonderful to hear your show. I got the Sirius Satellite Radio because of this channel, and your show is worth every cent of it.
Well, thank you.
It's really nice to hear a radio show that, for one thing, you don't have to throw things at, you know, after a little while. You're talking about ideas and about historical context of what's going on, and that's so important. You don't hear this kind of intellectual, this level of thought anywhere else on the radio, and I sure appreciate it. But the big thing I keep worrying about is we have to, I mean, I think Al Franken's right in that we have to, we've been taking it and we've been taking it, and they've slimed us for so many years, and we can't take it anymore.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Christmas always goes too fast. It's up to us to make it last. And all I want for Christmas is
and welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Mike LaPersio, who just came back from Iraq with Global Exchange. And, Mike, I'm curious how your son is doing. And Sarah from Santa Fe has a quick question. And, Sarah, if you'd drop in here and ask that real quickly, because we've only got about 3 minutes in this last segment, and then we'll give you a chance to answer, Mike.
Sure. Real quick. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Do you think it's possible for the multinational corporations to achieve their aims with a hostile Iraqi population? Because if so, they aren't going to give a fig for democracy or schools or hospitals or whatever. I mean, originally, I think they might have wanted to do it nicely, you know, so that...
You mean their aims of privatizing the entire Iraqi economy?
Yeah, and the oil extraction that they need to do.
Yeah.
And if they can do that, you know, it's a little harder, of course, and I'm sure it's a lot more expensive, but if they can still manage to achieve their aims with a hostile population, then all this yak about democracy and everything, it doesn't mean a
down
thing.
Down the tubes, yeah. Sarah, thanks for the question. What do you think, Mike? And also, how's your son doing?
Well, I think that, you know, in terms of, I mean, she means by privatization, the Iraqi people.
Well, you know, we've got now an old crony of George Bush's over there selling off the Iraqi industries to
right.
American companies, and they can fully repatriate the profits. They can pull all the profits back to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And of course, we're pulling the oil out.
Yeah. I think it's you know, as I said before, that you know the Iraqis think they can do it themselves. They think that I think obviously they're going to need some help, but it's a shame that we're not being more inclusive to the Iraqi population. It's a pretty hostile environment also for foreigners too. I mean, you know, I understand that you know.
Do you think that this thing, Mike, is going to spin out of control into a more and more Israel-like situation where you know it's more of the iron fist, or do you think that there's a possibility that democracy might emerge there? We've got about a minute left, a little less.
If we don't change things quickly, if we don't make things better, then I think that it's going to get a lot worse. That's just my gut reaction. That's the reaction of everybody that I've talked to.
We have a very small window. And just very quickly, how's your son doing?
He's doing great. He's doing really well. He's better than he was. Living conditions are improving. And, you know, he's fairly safe because these guys are virtually locked within these concrete walls.
Yeah, great. Mike LaPersio with Global Exchange, globalexchange.org. Mike, thanks very much for being on the program today. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back on the other side of the news here on the True People's Radio, the IE America Radio Network.
It's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky.
We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You
why
hate
why
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal.
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Widespread violence erupted in Iraq yesterday in the wake of the capture of former dictator Saddam Hussein. The sharply escalated attacks could indicate that the war in Iraq could be taking even more of a deadly turn. Hussein loyalists rioted in Baghdad, ambushed the U.S. patrol in Samarra, stormed the office of a U.S.-backed mayor in Fallujah, and battled American troops in Ramadi as cities in the Sunni Triangle region seethed over the ex-dictator's capture. As soldiers fought off angry protesters and guerrilla attacks Monday night and Tuesday, the 4th Infantry Division said it had snared a leader of the insurgency and 78 other people in a raid north of Baghdad, not far from where Saddam was captured 3 days ago. A roadside bomb wounded 3 American soldiers in Saddam's hometown of Tikrit, and a pro-Saddam demonstration in the northern city of Mosul ended in violence with a policeman killed and a second injured. London's Independent newspaper reports that as many as 18 Iraqi civilians were killed by American troops on Tuesday. Correspondent Robert Fisk said the troops shot indiscriminately into crowds of pro-Saddam demonstrators in the city of Ramadi, and 8 were killed in Samarra. Fisk reports that occupation security documents, not released to the public, report 30 attacks on U.S. forces in the past 24 hours. The Los Angeles City Council and County Board of Supervisors voted on Tuesday to sue the state of California to recover hundreds of millions of dollars in revenues lost when newly installed Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger rescinded an unpopular increase in car taxes. The two councils authorized their attorneys to join other municipalities seeking to restore the lost funds, which in Los Angeles County amounts to $2 million a day and is used to pay for fire, police, and other services. Connecticut Governor John Rowland vowed again Wednesday to stay in office despite the furor over his admission that he took gifts from employees and state contractors. In a speech in Middlesex, Rowland apologized again for what he said were failures on his part. Once a rising star in Republican politics, Rowland is now fending off talk of impeachment and questions about his ethics, honesty, and ability to govern. More after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
The Grinch stole Christmas, and now someone has stolen the Grinch. An 8-foot-tall inflatable decoration in the form of the character from Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas disappeared from a yard in New City, New York over the weekend. Police say there have been several thefts of oversized inflatable ornaments shaped like popular characters this season. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette.
Reveal the goddess in you.
The powers that be, both political and corporate, are expert at fooling themselves while mistakenly thinking that they're also fooling us. The latest culprits in this fool's game are the barons of cable television. Lobbyists for such outfits as Time Warner, Cablevision, and Cox rammed a deregulation law through Congress in 1997 that allows them to set their own rates. Trust us, they said at the time, promising that the elixir of unregulated competition would magically cause our monthly cable charges to fall. Like rubes at their first medicine show, Congress swallowed this tonic of lies, and now you and I are stuck with an unregulated cable TV monopoly in each of our towns that, far from lowering our rates, has jacked up our monthly bills by 40% in just 6 years. Well, yes, say the cable giants, but we now give you more channels than before. Who do they think they're fooling? Yes, we get more channels, but they show the same old junk, including repeats of repeats and dozens of channels we never requested and never watch. Indeed, we pay for about 63 channels, but mostly watch about 8. Well, yes, say the giants again, still believing they're fooling us, but the fees we pay for programming are up too, so we're being forced to raise our rates. Hey, Flim Flam Man, in many cases you are the programmer. For example, Time Warner owns CNN, TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network, and many others, so it's paying itself for the higher program costs. Besides, the cost of all the programs you get on cable is only about $7 of your monthly cable bill, which now averages nearly $37. Well, yes, say the giants, trying one more trick on us, but we need higher rates to survive. Survive? Your profit margins are running above 30%, about 3 times the average of other industries. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight this tomfoolery, call Consumers Union, 202-462-6262.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There is a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. And boy, we've got an interesting topic here for the first little bit of this hour. Jeffrey Smith has written a remarkable book, Seeds of Deception, exposing industry and government lies about the safety of the genetically modified, genetically engineered foods you're eating. And, of course, we're all familiar. Well, actually, maybe you're not. You know, the corporate media in America says that Europe is trying to block genetically modified foods from coming into Europe. And to some extent, that's true. But I think in most of the cases, Europe actually just wants them to be labeled. And most Americans would like them to be labeled. But it's against the law to label them here in the United States. Strangely enough, maybe Jeffrey can illuminate us about that. Jeffrey, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you.
Would you prefer to be called Jeffrey or Jeff?
Jeffrey, please.
Okay. Jeffrey, tell us, first of all, what's going on here? Your book refers to industry manipulation and political collusion, not sound science, is allowing genetically modified foods on the market. How so?
Well, if you look, for example, at the FDA's own scientist comments that were made public from a lawsuit, they said genetically modified foods are inherently unsafe and can lead to toxins, allergens, new diseases or nutritional problems that would not necessarily be obvious to those that created the foods, and therefore highly recommended that every variety be tested for long-term safety effects before being introduced into the marketplace. Their superiors, however, including a former attorney for Monsanto, the giant biotechnology company, declined to take their advice and said the foods can go on the market without any safety testing. If the industry themselves thinks it's safe, We're fine with it. You don't even have to tell us that you're introducing the food. This is just one example of a long line of how what you just described is political collusion and industry manipulation.
Jeffrey, do the veggie libel laws apply here?
Well, I have to be very careful about quoting just cited facts. So I'm fine as long as I stay with my cited facts.
Yeah, and I have to be, I mean, it wasn't the Oprah's guest that got prosecuted, it was Oprah. I have to be careful about what I say. Let's tell our listeners about the veggie libel laws.
In about 14 states, the biotechnology companies primarily got states to adopt laws.
Well, wasn't this the pesticide industry, actually, right after the Alar scare on 60 Minutes?
Right, and they're also related to the biotechnology industry.
They're the same
people. In fact, they genetically modify crops to resist death by their herbicides.
Right.
So they created a law in several states that made it illegal to speak poorly about food. Now, this has never been challenged in the Supreme Court, but many observers believe that it is almost certainly anti-constitutional. And it's something I had to look into before writing my book. And also, I had to be careful not to let the information out about my book before it got published, because I have described in my book how, for example, another book received a threatening letter from Monsanto's attorneys just before it was to come off the printer, and the publisher canceled the book altogether for fear of a lawsuit.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that can slow some folks down. Tell us about some of the, you said that there are only 10 published animal feeding studies on genetically modified foods and only two are independent.
That's right. And the two that are independent, one was the most in-depth animal feeding study ever conducted, and it showed that rats that were fed with a genetically modified potato engineered to produce its own insecticide ended up with potentially precancerous cell growth in the intestines and stomach, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, damaged immune system, atrophy of the liver, and that it wasn't the specific insecticide that caused the problem. It was somehow the process of genetic engineering, and they used that exact same process on the foods that we eat.
Hmm.
When the scientist went public with his information, he was fired from his job after 35 years and silenced with threats of a lawsuit. Eventually, he was invited to speak before Parliament and got his data back, and then it was submitted to The Lancet, a prestigious journal, and published.
This is quite remarkable. Now, the only human feeding trial of genetically modified food ever conducted confirmed that engineered genes transferred from a soy burger and soy milkshake to the bacteria inside the digestive tract after only one meal. This gene jumping is a big concern. I mean, this is the way that bacteria and viruses, among other things, mutate, is by acquiring genes from other nearby, well, whatever nearby source there may be. And the way that, for example, bacteria transmit to other bacteria resistance to certain toxins and these kind of things. What are the genes? I mean, why do we have to worry about this? What are the genes that are being inserted into these things that there might be a concern about jumping into other organisms? How could this play out?
Well, we know, for example, that an herbicide-resistant gene jumped from soybeans onto the gut bacteria, making the bacteria resistant to death by herbicide. Now, we don't have an understanding of what the medical implications of that in our intestines are, but there's a very great fear that the antibiotic-resistant marker gene, which is in corn, for example, that's genetically modified, it's engineered to resist death by ampicillin. Now, what if that were to jump from the corn fritters that we eat to our gut bacteria, rendering it accidentally genetically modified to resist ampicillin? We could create super diseases that can't be treated by antibiotics. But there's another thing that's potentially even worse. When you take a gene from one DNA and you insert it into the DNA of another, which is what genetic engineering is about, you have to insert what's called a promoter to turn that gene on permanently 24/7 around the clock. And what this promoter does is it overpowers the DNA's own self-regulation mechanism. Now, the concept that scientists told us was it would only turn on and keep on this gene to which it's attached that's inserted. We now know that it can turn on other genes in the DNA, causing them to pump out proteins 24/7 against the wishes of the DNA. Imagine if this promoter gene were to jump to gut bacteria or even internal organs. One scientist, Dr. Stanley Ewan, believes that this could create unregulated cell growth, which could potentially lead to cancer. Dr.
What's the definition of cancer?
Yeah, yeah. And he was the one that looked at the rats that were fed the potatoes and actually saw the excess cell growth in the intestines and in the stomach.
Well, the biotech industry says, you know, millions of people, I mean, billions of people around the world, certainly millions around the world, are eating genetically modified foods. I mean, what are the, just before I continue this question, you probably have these statistics right at your fingertips, the percentage of corn and soybeans that are grown in the United States that are genetically modified?
80% soy, 38% corn, 70% cotton, and 60% canola in North America.
Okay, so clearly, I mean, hundreds of millions of people just in North America are eating these things, and I haven't heard about anybody falling, you know, dropping dead from it.
Well, I have,
okay.
And I report about it in my book. Let's give an example. Let's give two examples. First of all, there is anecdotal or statistical evidence, which is not completely confirming, but we know, for example, that when genetically modified soy was first introduced into the United Kingdom, soy allergy skyrocketed by 50%. Now, we know that genetically modified soy has an increase in an allergen called trypsin inhibitor by 27%, and that could be the reason, but it also could be this new protein that renders the soy resistant to herbicide, and that particular protein has never been part of the human food supply before, so that could be the reason. But a more sobering example occurred in the 1980s. There was a food supplement called L-tryptophan, and it was genetically modified. They genetically modified a bacteria to produce the tryptophan more economically. It's a Japanese company. And it turns out that apparently this process created extra contaminants in the L-tryptophan, which were deadly. About 100 Americans died, about 5,000 to 10,000 fell sick. And it was only this company's L-tryptophan, not the five other suppliers, that caused this problem.
But was that the, you know, I remember when that happened, and they were running around in health food stores pulling this stuff off the shelves, and they banned it in the United States, and even the companies that were making safe L-tryptophan were stuck, you know, put out of business, basically. And it was presented in the media as factory contamination, not as the failure of genetically modified organisms.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it describes the control over the media that the biotechnology companies, and even their supporters in the FDA had. In fact, when the FDA representative testified before Congress, he never mentioned that the brand was genetically modified. Instead, he blamed the epidemic on health fraud schemes. What you're talking about in terms of the manufacturing method is a common myth, and that is, it is true that when Showa Denko, the Japanese company, introduced their strain, their genetically modified strain 5, 2 weeks later they lowered the amount of carbon in their filter. Now, this provided the excuse that the biotechnology companies needed and jumped on it and said, it was the change in the filtration method. But in my book, I bring out new information that had been hidden from public view that describes how hundreds of people over the previous 4 years, 4 years before the filter was changed, developed the disease. And that's because Showa Denko had used genetically modified bacteria from 1984. And so they were only talking about the fact that when they introduced the strongest bacteria in 1988, that created this huge outbreak in terms of the sickness, but hundreds had actually been falling sick due to lower levels of contaminants in earlier genetically modified batches.
Yeah, we're speaking with Jeffrey M. Smith, the author of Seeds of Deception, the definitive book on genetically modified foods. And Jeffrey, what can we do?
Well, that's an important question, because I don't want to travel around the world and just scare people and walk away. So what I describe is actually a very sophisticated but simple strategy. We can do two things. We can protect ourselves, and at the same time, by protecting ourselves, we can help end this dangerous experiment. By protecting ourselves, we can choose foods that are not genetically engineered. That will produce enormous economic pressure, and we could see the kind of landslide in the United States in terms of companies declaring that they're going to go non-GMO that we saw in England in 1999, when first Unilever and then Nestle's and McDonald's and Safeway and Burger King all said they were going to take GMOs out of their ingredients based on consumer concerns. But that was out of their European ingredients, not their U.S. ingredients. To avoid eating genetically modified foods, we have three options. We can take foods that are organic, and they're not legally allowed to contain genetically modified foods. We can take foods that say non-GMO. Those are mostly found in health food stores, and not all the foods in health food stores are non-GMO. Or we can become label readers and know that we can't, if we're trying to avoid genetically modified foods, we have to avoid soy, corn. corn, cottonseed oil, and canola oil. There's also dairy products from cows injected with bovine growth hormone. That's a genetically modified
hormone. Which is almost all the cows these days that
well,
are not organic.
Well, 22% of the cows in the United States are injected, but their milk is generally mixed with all the major commercial dairy's milk. So yeah. You have to find...
So you've got to buy organic.
Yeah, buy organic or something that says no hormone.
Buy organic. Great. Jeffrey Smith, thank you so much for being with us today. Your book, Seeds of Deception, is extraordinary. Exposing industry and government lies about the safety of the genetically engineered foods you're eating. I'm assuming it's available in bookstores all across America?
Bookstores, health food stores, online at seedsofdeception.com, and a lot of different places.
Great. Jeffrey, thank you very much for being with us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen. For the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The Mike Molloy Show.
According to the GAO report, many items needed to establish a laboratory for making biological warfare agents were being sold on the internet to the public from the Department of Defense's excess property inventory for pennies on the dollar. So the next time the Bush crime family says, well, it's time to invade, oh, let me close my eyes, spin me around, okay, let me point, Syria! Because they have weapons of mass destruction.
This is so much fun. Spin me around again. Iran! Oh, I love this game. Uncle Dick, can I play this game so much?
The next time we do that, is it not incumbent upon us to ask where they got the equipment that they used to make weapons of mass destruction?
Fast Tag says $27 billion. It's yours for $1.29.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I saw her today at the reception. A glass of wine in her hand. I knew she was gonna meet her connection. At her feet was man. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want.
But if you try sometimes.
But if you try sometimes, well, you might find.
Get what you need. We need a decent president in this country. Maybe in 2004, we need a statesman. We need somebody, or a stateswoman. We need somebody who doesn't turn the entire world against us, who doesn't use 9/11 as an excuse to invade an oil-rich country that had nothing to do with 9/11. We need somebody who isn't decimating the environment, who isn't borrowing money from our children and grandchildren to give to his wealthy buddies. Yeah. We know there is something that we want, and there is what we need as a nation. Is the world safer with preemptive war or not? I suspect not. I want to get back to that. I want to just touch on a couple of quick news things here. This, we just, you know, Jeffrey was just on, the author of Seeds of Deception. And this from the New Scientist. New Scientist is the British science magazine. This is an example of how this stuff gets out. GM crops benefit the environment. An article by Andy Coghlan. It opens, the first sentence of this article in the Science magazine says, modified sugar beet is far more environmentally friendly than conventional beet. Now, that would make you think it's like safer to eat, or, less harmful to other plants. Well, it turns out, Phillips and colleague Richard Bennett say the benefits arise mainly because farmers spray much less weed killer and pesticide onto genetically modified beet less often, thus saving a lot of tractor fuel and reducing the impact on global warming. So, I will leave it to you to conclude the significance of that. It's very strange. But I don't want to run afoul of the veggie libel laws in 14 states and end up like Oprah, so we will leave it at that. Mr. Smith limps home. I don't know if you saw this in today's New York Times or yesterday's New York Times. Mr. Smith limps home. Remember Mr. Smith, Representative Nick Smith of Michigan, who was basically strong-armed by Denny Hastert on the floor of the House of Representatives to vote for the Medicaid bill. The Medicare bill, rather, and refused to. And he came home and he wrote a newspaper column. He was so steamed about this. He came home and he wrote a newspaper column saying that there were, quote, bribes and special deals, end quote. He wrote that in the newspaper, the word bribes, that he had been offered bribes and special deals. And on a radio show in Michigan, he said that the blatant pressures included, and I quote, an offer of $100,000 plus, end quote, for his son's campaign. See, Representative Nick Smith of Michigan is retiring from Congress, and he has what's considered a relatively safe Republican seat, and so they're running his son to fill in for him. This is the big new thing with the Republicans. Dynastic, what's the word, where one follows the other. Anyhow, you know what I'm talking about. Dynastic, one following the other. Building these family dynasties, and Nick Smith is trying to do the same thing. His son Brad is running for his seat. And somebody offered him a bribe, he said. Somebody offered $100,000 to his son. Well, the New York Times reports yesterday, Mr. Smith, so hopeful of keeping the House seat in the family, did not object when Speaker Dennis Hastert this being the guy who apparently was the briber, concluded there's nothing of substance here. In other words, Denny Hastert was accused of bribing Nick Smith, or attempting to. Denny Hastert investigated Denny Hastert, and Denny Hastert said, there's nothing of substance here, nothing to worry about. So, says the New York Times, everything's back to normal in the Capitol. Thus ends a nearly tragic story in the life of another Republican. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Hi, this is John Lucas from Operations here at IE America Radio Network, wishing you and yours a safe and happy holiday.
Climate change is more than a global environmental issue. It's also a matter of justice, according to a Michigan scholar. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Environmental problems hit harder at the poor and people of color. University of Michigan social scientist Bunyan Bryant says global climate change might become the greatest cause of environmental injustice.
That's going to affect a lot of people. It's going to affect a lot of people in this country because people will be migrating from coastal areas that's flooded out. In other areas, there'll be droughts. Tropical diseases will be moving north. People will be moving across geopolitical boundaries across the world. And it's going to cause regional conflicts. And so the greatest environmental justice of it all is global warming.
Bryant says the pattern will be the same across the planet with coastal areas and politically unstable nations most affected by global warming. Bryant claims the United States, the world's biggest emitter of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, is committing an act of environmental racism.
Environmental racism is an extension of racism. It has to do with various decisions and policies and rules and regulations that result in the disproportionate impact of environmental hazards on people of color.
Bryant says developing countries are too poor to deal with the droughts, floods, and rising sea levels that could result from climate change.
We have to remember that there are people in this world that are in desperate need. I mean, they can just barely eke out a living.
Bryant says it's a form of injustice for the United States to create pollution that places a greater burden on the world's poorest people. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune in to tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It doesn't matter what they do. All that matters is my relationship to you. I'll take you up. Get you in my car. They're gone for long.
back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It was revealed today that despite recent Food and Drug Administration warnings about mercury. Now, it's interesting. Today, for those of you who are fans of astrology, and I confess to profound ignorance about astrology, about the only thing I know about is how to read my horoscope in the newspaper, which I read with some considerable skepticism, and this thing about mercury going retrograde. And it happened today. Mercury goes retrograde today for the next more or less 3 weeks, as I recall. And so according to the folklore or the astrology lore for those true believers, and they may well be right, I don't know. I actually, one of my publishers refuses to sign contracts when Mercury's retrograde. You know, anything that can go wrong will go wrong starting today for the next 3 weeks, more or less, plus or minus a little bit. Anyhow, speaking of mercury, despite recent FDA warnings about mercury and a government report that shows the lethal health effects of mercury, the Bush administration announced a proposal that would remove mercury. This is the element mercury as opposed to the planet mercury from a list of hazardous air pollutants. Yeah, folks, mercury is no longer a hazardous air pollutant, according to the Bush administration. It can still kill you, though. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Turtle in Santa Fe's on the line. Hey, Turtle, thanks for waiting. I think.
Hey, Tom, hi. Sorry. The idea that genetically engineered foods actually require less pesticides has been proven false many times. It's straight propaganda. In India, they've had to apply seven times more pesticides on genetically engineered crops, and they've received 30 to 40% yield of the regular crops. It's their favorite form of propaganda, but it's absolutely not true. Not only that, but the pesticides that you do have to use in order to you're actually required by contract to use when you plant Monsanto and other genetically modified crops.
You're talking actually about herbicides, and it's Roundup and the Roundup Ready products. Is that right? Yeah. Okay.
I mean, at least in the Roundup Ready category, and I think other genetically modified crops have also been demonstrated not to actually require less pesticides. And the pesticides that they do use can be significantly more toxic. And then sometimes what has happened recently is some of the different genetically modified crops have interbred. And then not only do you have to spray the Monsanto product, the Monsanto herbicide, but you often have to spray the specific product designed for the other genetically modified crop that you planted that interbred with your crop.
Yeah. So it's a problem. Turtle, I got to stop you there because in 14 states, you and I could get into legal trouble for having this conversation, bizarre as that sounds. And, you know, unless you want to cite me the specific references as Jeffrey has in his book. But I encourage you to pick up Jeffrey's book, Seeds of Deception, although obviously you already know this stuff.
I've been following Vandana Shiva's work, and she's been traveling around the world. Talking about the hazards of genetically modified crops, and in particular, she's doing that because the farmers in India have been committing suicide en masse, 5,000 a year, because there's a huge suicide problem in the United States of America also because of farms being driven out of business, and it's a USDA policy actually to push the family farmer out of business, and the whole thing about it's basically targeted at the very same farmers who are actually doing the best job of growing food in this country.
Yep, got it. Turtle, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And this is a very real problem. The larger problem of the policies of our government. And to what extent is our government, not just in the area of food and food production and food distribution, although that's a very real one, but just right across the board in healthcare, in insurance, in banking, you know, the banking industry getting us to change our bankruptcy laws, on and on it goes, to the extent that our politicians are in the pockets of industry. Vice President, speaking of politicians in the pockets of industry, Vice President Dick Cheney yesterday granted a rare interview to right-wing radio talk show host Armstrong Williams. Cheney, who Newsweek notes discarded intelligence that didn't fit his ideological motives, lashed out at progressives and the media for pointing out his distortions and deceptions. He said, quote, "It drives me nuts when I see stories that are fundamentally inaccurate," end quote, and lamented that people don't check the facts, end quote. However, President Bush made the fundamentally inaccurate claim that, quote, Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa. a claim the White House was forced to later rescind. U.S. Aid Director Andrew Natsios said on 4/23/03 that, quote, the American part of reconstruction will be $1.7 billion. We have no plans for further on funding for Iraq, end quote. Just weeks later, the administration requested an additional $87 billion. And Cheney himself told Meet the Press, quote, we know that Saddam has a long-standing relationship with the al-Qaeda organization, end quote. A claim since refuted by the United States, as well as the United Nations and European intelligence reports. Dick Cheney and accuracy and truth seem not to be phrases that should be in the same sentence. The caliphate, now here, getting back to the, you know, the Khan agenda, this idea, well, let me just, our quote for the day, let me just share with you this. This, back in 1787, they were hammering out the Constitution for the United States. And one of the concerns was that they wanted there to be a head of state. Like, you know, England has had the king at that time, King George III, and who was the head of state. And so they wanted a head of state here because it's useful to have somebody who is the figurehead, somebody who can meet foreign heads of state when they come, somebody who can go overseas and be sort of the ambassador, not like the Secretary of State, but, you know, you understand what I'm talking about. So they felt that it was important to have that role being played by somebody. But they were very worried that warlords, kings, had historically used war as the way to oppress their people. And so they were debating in the Continental Congress how to have a president and yet prevent that president from ever becoming a warlord. To prevent that person from ever rising up and taking over, as it were. And James Madison, who many call the father of the United States Constitution, he spent several years before the Constitutional Convention during the 7 years of the Revolutionary War studying in great detail every book, every scholar, every historian he could find on anything that had to do with any country that had ever had a constitution, the history of English common law, of British common law, the history of the Iroquois Confederacy, the history of Rome and the Roman Republic, the history of Athens and the Athenian democracy, everything. And he's widely regarded as the guy who really put together the American Constitution. And he kept the notes from the Constitutional Convention. And here's what he said in arguing for a president who by law did not have the authority or power to declare war. He said, and I quote, in war, too, the discretionary power of the executive branch or the president, is extended. Its influence in dealing out offices, honors, and emoluments, in other words, awards and goodies, money for your friends, is multiplied. And all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of subduing the force of the people. The same malignant aspect in republicanism may be traced in the inequality of fortunes and the opportunities of fraud growing out of a state of war, and in the degeneracy of manners and morals engendered by both. No nation, James Madison concluded, no nation can preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare, end quote. And they took him seriously and they said, okay, we will make it so that only Congress can declare war. The president does not have the right to declare war. He should not be making that decision. He cannot make that decision because when one person makes a decision that momentous, the probability of a screw-up is dramatically increased. As they had seen in 1,000 years of history of kings and warlords in Europe. And so now here, Robert Byrd, this will be in The Nation soon, I assume. It was posted online day before yesterday. Robert Byrd gave a speech at the 138th anniversary celebration of The Nation magazine, which was on December 14th. He said, this day's news does not lessen the danger that the Bush doctrine of preemptive strike poses to international peace and stability. In order to bring lasting stability to Iraq, that nation needs the help of the entire world, not just America and her fighting needs. As each day passes, and as more American soldiers are killed and wounded in Iraq, I become ever more convinced that the war in Iraq was the wrong war, at the wrong time, in the wrong place, for the wrong reasons. Senator Byrd goes on to point out what a huge price we are now paying for the president's bull-headed rush to invoke the unwise and unprecedented doctrine of preemption to invade Iraq. An invasion without provocation, an invasion without the support of the United Nations or the international community. And then he talks about the casualties of this war will have serious repercussions for generations to come. This United States Senator Robert Byrd. Truth is one casualty. Despite the best efforts of the White House to contort the invasion of Iraq into an extension of the war on terror, there was never a connection between Saddam Hussein and September 11. There was never a connection between Iraq and September 11. Not a single Iraqi was among the 19 hijackers of those four planes. Despite dire warnings from the president, Saddam Hussein had at his fingertips neither the means nor the materiel to unleash deadly weapons of mass destruction on the world. Despite presidential rhetoric to the contrary, Iraq did not pose a grave and gathering menace to the security of the United States. The war in Iraq was nothing less than a manufactured war. It was a war served up to a deliberately misled and deluded American public to suit the neoconservative political agenda of the Bush White House. And then he goes on to point out the damage that this has done. I mean, this is the bottom line. You know, I remember when I was a kid. There was a kid who lived up the street from me, between me and the school. His name was Dennis. He was a year older than I was, and he was the neighborhood bully. Dennis just loved to beat people up. He did it for fun. We learned later, not that much later, but we learned later that Dennis's father used to beat him up. I mean, you know, it's something that he had learned to do. He grew up in a violent family. And he was a violent person. And his idea of how to have peace was to have everybody terrified of him. And everybody was. I remember I used to walk all the way around the block just to avoid walking past his house. And I wasn't the only one. If we think in the United States that being a bully is the best way to have peace, if we follow Dennis's logic, then I fear that we're going to end up with the same quality of life that Dennis ended up with. Dennis was very much alone. He was really a very scared little boy. I mean, you know, this is when I was 10, 11, 12 years old. He was very scared. And he was very neurotic. I mean, he was very unhappy. His quality of life was awful. And this is the logic that this administration is using and driving us into war. Pardon my distraction there. I'm hearing a faint echo off a speaker in another room, and it's... Anyhow, a lasting casualty, Robert Byrd said, is the international credibility and reputation of the United States of America. We have squandered, he says, the goodwill that we had rallied to our side after the attacks of 9/11. Our beloved nation is now viewed as the world bully. This is a real tragedy. And as James Madison pointed out, Congress completely abrogated its responsibility to declare war when it said to George Bush, you decide. You decide. After Bush had already declared the Bush Doctrine, saying, well, yeah, we'll attack anybody we feel like it. And then Congress says, okay, cool, you want to attack somebody, we'll give you that authority. And now, only now, we're discovering. This was published in FloridaToday.com. One of the Florida newspapers. U.S. Senator Bill Nelson said Monday the Bush administration last year told him and other senators, see, it's just now coming out, that Iraq not only had weapons of mass destruction, but that they had the means to deliver them to East Coast cities in the United States. Nelson, a Democrat of Tallahassee, Florida, said about 75 senators got that news during a classified briefing before last October's congressional vote authorizing the use of force to remove Saddam Hussein from power. Do you get it? All of the senators were sitting around and the administration came in and said Saddam Hussein not only has weapons of mass destruction, biological and chemical. In fact, Nelson said the senators were told that Iraq had both biological and chemical weapons, notably anthrax, and it could deliver them to cities along the eastern seaboard via unmanned aerial vehicles, commonly known as drones. These guys heard this. George Bush made the same claim in his speech back in April in Cleveland, as I recall. You heard the clip of it yesterday. These guys heard this, and they believed him. They believed this administration. And that's why they said, okay, if you need the authority to go after this guy, do it. And so now we have so many of our young men and women dead and maimed because of a lie. What a tragedy. We must change this. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You know, you ought to check your credit report.
But I just don't have time.
I have to clean out the garage.
And take the kids to the doctor.
And balance my checkbook.
And take the dog to the vet.
And mow the lawn.
And do the grocery shopping. And call the bank.
Stop. If you haven't checked your credit report, there's a fast, easy solution. Log on to freecreditreport.com and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report. And get 30 days of our credit check monitoring service free. So don't say,
I'm just too busy.
Log on to freecreditreport.com today.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus Razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
For
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring Fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Now in Sacramento, there's Conan the Groper promising he's changed.
Have behaved badly sometimes. Yes, it is true that I was on rowdy movie sets. And I have done things that were not right, which I thought then was playful. But now I recognize that I have offended people.
I thought I was being playful. Just because I grabbed her breast, I thought I was playful. Kathy's laughing at my Schwarzenegger. I'm sorry, I can't do it. All right, you do it.
I've groped and molested women in the past, but if you elect me, I promise I'll never do it again, because you know powerful politicians never abuse their power for sex.
Okay.
And that's how it's done.
Okay.
Hello, cutie pie. Your clothes, give them to me. Now. Come on.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Bells will be ringing the glad, glad news. Oh, what a Christmas to give the blues. My baby's gone. I have no friends to wish me greetings.
Back, it's Tom Hartman here on the IE America Radio Network, and happy holidays. Merry Christmas, happy Kwanzaa, happy, whatever your holiday may be. It's a remarkable time of year, an absolutely remarkable time of year. Roberta in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Roberta, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you again. I just wanted to say again, you mentioned that Bush was doing everything, the Bush regime, the junta, as we call it. He was never really elected, so to call him re-elected is kind of a misnomer, I think. But I'd like to say that he's just a Christian front. He's no more Christian than Machiavelli. As a matter of fact, he follows the teachings of Machiavelli, although I'm sure he doesn't realize it.
Yeah, do you really think that George Bush is sufficiently sophisticated to be thinking in those? I think Karl Rove is.
Well,
you know, but I think Bush just, you know, thinks he's been ordained by God to do what he's doing, and any decision that he or his advisors make has got to be the right one, therefore, and he just kind of goes straight ahead with absolute certainty.
It's satanic. Niccolo Machiavelli in the Renaissance advocated the practice of vice to win wars. He came to this philosophy through, you know, the Italian invasions, incursions that were happening to Italy, and to save face, to practice the virtues of machismo, which in Italian was virtù, strange word, having nothing to do with virtue, the opposite of virtue, vice, and that, you know, nice guys finish last.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the whole John Wayne thing. Well, yeah. You know, Hitler, Nietzsche, the nihilists.
Yeah, well, anyway, it even goes beyond that, Roberta. I think that there's just this, and Machiavelli, we did a whole program on this, actually, about 4 months ago, where we went through The Prince chapter by chapter and just, you know, laid out what Machiavelli was proposing. And it's there. It's absolutely there. But there's also something that's just grounded in the human psyche about when people are afraid, they look to strong leaders. And I think the Bush has played fear like a violin. It's a scary thing. Roberta, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
You've been
been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
A chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding me? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Widespread violence erupted in Iraq yesterday in the wake of the capture of former dictator Saddam Hussein. The sharply escalated attacks could indicate that the war in Iraq could be taking even more of a deadly turn. Hussein loyalists rioted in Baghdad, ambushed a U.S. patrol in Samarra, stormed the office of a U.S.-backed mayor in Fallujah, and battled American troops in Ramadi as cities in the Sunni Triangle region seethed over the ex-dictator's capture. As soldiers fought off angry protesters and guerrilla attacks Monday night and Tuesday, the 4th Infantry Division said it had snared a leader of the insurgency and 78 other people in a raid north of Baghdad, not far from where Saddam was captured 3 days ago. A roadside bomb wounded 3 American soldiers in Saddam's hometown of Tikrit, and a pro-Saddam demonstration in the northern city of Mosul ended in violence, with a policeman killed and a second injured. London's independent newspaper reports that as many as 18 Iraqi civilians were killed by American troops on Tuesday. Correspondent Robert Fisk said the troops shot indiscriminately into crowds of pro-Saddam demonstrators in the city of Ramadi, and 8 were killed in Samarra. Fisk reports that occupation security documents, not released to the public, report 30 attacks on U.S. forces in the past 24 hours. A truck loaded with explosives rammed into a small bus and exploded early Wednesday in Baghdad, killing at least 10 people, an Iraqi deputy minister said. A police officer put the toll at 22. The blast occurred at 5 a.m. in the capital's Al-Bayah district. 2 cars nearby were destroyed in the blast. Iraq's deputy interior minister said 10 people were killed, but a policeman at the scene put the total at 22 and said the victims included 18 passengers on the bus. Connecticut Governor John Rowland vowed again Wednesday to stay in office despite the furor over his admission that he took gifts from employees and state contractors. In a speech in Middlesex, Rowland apologized again for what he said were failures on his part. Once a rising star in Republican politics, Rowland is now fending off talk of impeachment and questions about his ethics, honesty, and ability to govern. More after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
Bruce Springsteen has a friend at the San Diego Zoo. Almost 4 months after his birth, a male panda born in captivity at the zoo was named on Tuesday Mei Sheng, or Born in the USA in English. Mei Sheng was born on August 19th, but by Chinese tradition, baby pandas are not named until 100 days after their birth. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen. For the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
The powers that be, both political and corporate, are expert at fooling themselves while mistakenly thinking that they're also fooling us. The latest culprits in this fool's game are the barons of cable television. Lobbyists for such outfits as Time Warner, Cablevision, and Cox rammed a deregulation law through Congress in 1997 that allows them to set their own rates. Trust us, they said at the time, promising that the elixir of unregulated competition would magically cause our monthly cable charges to fall. Like rubes at their first medicine show, Congress swallowed this tonic of lies, and now you and I are stuck with an unregulated cable TV monopoly in each of our towns that, far from lowering our rates, has jacked up our monthly bills by 40% in just 6 years. Well, yes, say the cable giants, but we now give you more channels than before. Who do they think they're fooling? Yes, we get more channels, but they show the same old junk, including repeats of repeats and dozens of channels we never requested and never watch. Indeed, we pay for about 63 channels, but mostly watch about 8. Well, yes, say the giants again, still believing they're fooling us, but the fees we pay for programming are up too, so we're being forced to raise our rates. Hey, Flim Flam Man, in many cases you are the programmer. For example, Time Warner owns CNN, TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network, and many others, so it's paying itself for the higher program costs. Besides, the cost of all the programs you get on cable is only about $7 of your monthly cable bill, which now averages nearly $37. Well, yes, say the giants, trying one more trick on us, but we need higher rates to survive. Survive? Your profit margins are running above 30%, about 3 times the average of other industries. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight this tomfoolery, call Consumers Union, 202-462-6262.
Hi, this is Suzanne Gowardy.
I'm El Bracciotti, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey.
This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud.
This is Steve Damschutter.
This is Shaw Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger.
From our family, cheers. Have
a happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too cute?
I like Santa Claus.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
Well, did you see the news this morning in Stockholm, Sweden? That irascible Swede Hans Blix, he's just taken over the leadership of a new organization. It's called the International Independent Commission on Weapons of Mass Destruction. And it's an international commission that was established this year. It's the first international commission focused just on WMDs since the Tokyo Forum in 1999. It includes William J. Perry, who was our defense secretary under Bill Clinton. And Blix this morning, or reported this morning, presumably he said it yesterday, Hans Blix said Tuesday, it's becoming, this is from the Associated Press, it's becoming increasingly clear, quote, end quote, that Saddam Hussein's regime did not have any weapons of mass destruction. He also said he didn't think Saddam's capture would result in the discovery of any weapons in Iraq. This, again, is just the question that has confounded me, is when Saddam was caught, why weren't all the news pundits asking the question, Well, now we have him. When will he tell us where the weapons of mass destruction are? Why did nobody even mention the weapons of mass destruction? Why instead was the assumption made that somehow this would harm the Democrats or Howard Dean, and that seemed to be the topic of discussion? I mean, as I've been paying attention to this, and I haven't heard a single Democrat or liberal or progressive or green or anybody say, oh, what a bummer, they got Saddam. Well, other than Tricia in our chat room, sorry, Tricia. You got to drop into our chat room sometime. It's a really interesting crowd of folks. TomHartmann.com, www.TomHartmann.com will get you there on the Internet, along with our archives and the live web stream if you want to hear it, and all kinds of information. Chapters from the books that I've written that are in print, links to them, and all sorts of stuff. Anyhow, Hans Blix says, no weapons. Blix said he thought most of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction were destroyed when? In 1991. And, in fact, that's pretty much what Scott Ritter said on this program, and as well as in many other places, was that, you know, he went over there in the mid-90s and found a bunch of stuff and destroyed it, but most of it was already gone. I mean, we bombed them pretty thoroughly, wiped out their Air Force. So this now in the and they want our Social Security money too department. A surge, this is another Associated Press story in today's newspaper, a surge in natural gas prices is raising fears of higher heating costs this winter and has prompted a demand in Congress for an investigation into possible price gouging and market manipulation. Natural gas prices on both the spot and futures markets have soared nearly 50% since just before Thanksgiving. Well, you would think, wow, if the price of natural gas has gone up 50%, it must mean that there's a lot less natural gas. Well, actually, last week the Energy Department said natural gas supplies remained at nearly 3 trillion cubic feet, slightly above the 5-year average for this time of year. No, friends, I'm sorry. It's not that there's less natural gas. Then what is it? I mean, after all, don't the conservatives tell us in their religion of the free market that if you simply let the captains of business control everything, everything will work out. The invisible hand will take care of it. Well, yes, it turns out that the invisible hand will take care of it all right and put it in its pocket. And so now we have, of course, the energy secretary, you know, one of these guys in the Bush administration, one of these true believers in the religion of deregulation and corporations can do no wrong, saying, you know, let's not have any, quote, premature finger-pointing, end quote. But Senator Orrin Hatch, another good Republican, but at least one who I think has a few more principles and scruples than the average, has promised hearings into the issue. He said he couldn't understand this. It doesn't make any sense. He says he couldn't understand how normal market forces could cause a 50% jump in prices so quickly when supplies appear adequate. This is, this is the marketplace into which they want you to put your Social Security money. Absolutely, you know, just played for it, played with. Oh, it's 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Kurt, a trucker heading south to Sacramento, is on the line. Hey, Kurt, welcome to the Tom Hartmann program. What's on your mind today?
Morning, Tom.
Morning.
Hello?
Yeah, you're live and on the air.
Okay, I couldn't hear it.
Just turn down your radio.
It's off.
Oh, okay.
But the volume's kind of softer hearing you with the noise of the truck. Anyway, that aside, there's a radio ad on about a baby, and all you hear is a baby crying. And then they come on and say that what is really sad, more sad than hearing a baby crying, is where's the lack of someone coming to respond to the baby's cries. It is sad to have a Bush, anyway, spouting off and being so inaccurate and so on, but where is the exposure or the outcry or the people educating the
it's right here, Kurt.
Populace and the voters.
It's right here. We're doing it. We're doing it every day. 3 hours a day, 5 days a week.
I'm listening to you speaking to the choir, but where is the Democons and where is the Now or Raider or Sierra Club or where's the people, the congressmen on the Hill? Where is somebody speaking out?
There are actually a lot of voices speaking out. You know, it's amazing how Howard Dean got just raked over the coals by everybody for simply saying, you know, capturing Saddam is not going to make America more safe. Well, of course it's not going to make America more safe. Saddam was not a threat to America. So, you know, so anyhow, my point is there are people speaking out. There are people trying to, you know, it's just that the forces that be, there's a lot of money in play here, Kurt. There's an enormous amount of money in play. This is what Eisenhower warned us about.
I'm aware of all that, but another secondary question, Dan, is that if the right side is so successful getting their message out, I understand the money play and so on and so forth. But if they're so successful, if the left side cannot come up with an original thought of their own, why cannot they copy, imitate the right side and get some kind of publicity stunt or something where, like Franken or Kennedy or somebody that can speak up and get the word out to the ABC, NBC, CBS, and so on?
We're doing it. And the left does have a lot of original ideas. In fact, the conservatives are the ones who are lacking any ideas. I mean, the basic conservative notion is cheap labor, let the corporations take control of everything, and pit people against each other on moral and social issues. And, you know, that's the oldest trick in the book. The liberal democracy is a much more modern idea than conservative autocracy, which is, you know, the bottom line is we're here. There's this network. There are other networks starting up. There's a lot of good information out there. There's a lot of people spreading the word. And you can be part of it, Kurt. I mean, you know, I encourage you to call into to not just, you know, this talk show and the choir, but you know, at other times when I'm not on the air, if you happen to be listening into a right-wing talk show, call them. You'd be surprised. A lot of them will actually let you get through the screeners. You know, frankly, I like it when conservatives call my show because it gives me an opportunity to interact with them in a way that gives people an opportunity to know how to speak, you know, this side of the argument, as it were. And folks on the right don't mind a general. There's a couple who will screen out lefties, but I would suggest that you call in, that you write letters to the editor, that you get outspoken. You know, talk to folks at the truck stops and whatever. You know, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, spread the word. Be part of it.
I understand that, but two or three points, if I may, is the year about the fourth talk show I've already called on this same station.
Mm-hmm.
So you know who I've talked to already.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the original ideas, I understand and agree with what you're saying here, but I meant as far as being able to attract the limelight and speak out.
Well, I think, Kurt, what's happening is that trend is really going quickly. This show premiered on this network in April of this year on one station or maybe two, and now we're a little over 20 stations, as I recall. We just added another one, and this show is growing, and it's just not just this show. There are liberal talk show hosts across America that all of a sudden are getting paid attention to, and I think what's happened is that, you know, the conservatives, they came out, Rush started the whole thing, and everybody publishing. I see the same thing in the publishing industry with the books that I have published. I've had publishers say, "We want the same book, only different. You know, people liked that book, so we want you to write that book again, only different." So you know, Rush was successful in '87, and so they said, you know, hey, we need somebody just like Rush, only different. And so you get all these and they thought the conservative was part of the formula of success. Now they're discovering that the formula of success has to do with simply it being a political talk show, that half of America is, you know, in the last election voted for Gore and Nader, not for George Bush, and there's nobody talking to those folks. And so now it's starting to pick up, and you'd be amazed the number of radio stations across the United States now, mostly on a local basis, that are picking up liberal talk show hosts, and this is the growth industry that you know, this right here. And I think within probably 2 or 3 years, we're going to see the pendulum swing. I don't think it's going to swing way over to the left and everybody's going to dump the conservatives. I think we're going to end up in the middle. But I think that this imbalance that we've been experiencing is going to be corrected simply by, you know, by the forces of the marketplace, as it were, since the government hasn't been involving itself. Thanks for the call, Kurt. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Lynn in New York is on the line. Hey, Lynn, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. Actually, I'm so delighted to find out that you're on the radio because I had read your articles, in fact, on my non-commercial radio show.
So oh, great.
I'm glad you're out there speaking to a lot of people. And I wanted to speak to your issue about media pundits and why they hadn't raised the question of when is Saddam going to tell us about the WMDs. Well, I think that, you know, the media pundits may be corrupt and they may be craven, but they're not stupid. And they know that there are no WMDs. So why bother to ask and maintain the charade? I think everyone understands, at least at those levels of elite opinion, what the purpose of the war is. I mean, maybe the average person in the street is fooled, but not those guys. Those are well-educated, well-informed people, even if we don't agree with their politics.
Lynn, what do you think they think the purpose of the war was?
Oh, the purpose of a war is to gain control over strategic resources.
Yeah.
They know about peak oil. They know about the importance of the Iraqi oil reserves being one of the few remaining large oil reserves that's easy and cheap to pump out of the ground.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Lynn, thank you for the call. I'm sorry, the music means we got to cut here, but you're spot on correct. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol is lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
To talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Is the world safer with preemptive war or not? Why do the conservatives allow the oil industry to control government? Strange questions. You know, these are the questions that some people wake up in the middle of the night wondering. It's since 1998. This, according to a special report by Bob Williams and Kevin Bogardus, since 1998, oil, gas, and related service companies in the Fortune 1000 list gave $13.9 million to Republicans compared to $3.2 million to Democrats. That's a ratio of 4-1. And what was the result of this? What Senator John McCain called the No Lobbyist Left Behind Act. It's a pretty remarkable, this energy bill. I'll give you a little more information about that in just a second. First, we've got Kevin in Tampa. It's called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And Kevin, you're on the air. Thanks for calling the program.
Thanks, Tom, and good afternoon from Chile, Florida.
Chile?
Yeah, 54 right now.
Oh, wow. It got up to 32 here in Vermont today. I went out and took a walk. It was raining. We've got 2.5 feet of snow, and it was raining. It's very strange weather.
I guess 54 sounds warm.
Listen. Yeah, of the 10 largest storms in the history of the state of Vermont, going all the way back to the late 1600s, we've had three of those 10 largest storms in the last month and a half. It's like this is a weird year, and I suspect the same thing is happening all over the country. We're seeing these big forest fires out west.
It's a weird year for everything.
Yeah. Global warming visits. Anyhow, that's not what you called about.
No.
What's up?
No, what I called about these inconsistencies and illogical poll results that are coming out. Bush's numbers jumped 6-8 points, you know, depending upon the poll you look, because Osama was captured. And I even saw a poll where it said, I think it was on NBC.
Not Osama, Saddam.
Saddam, yeah, I said Osama. I'm sorry. God, what would happen if they found Osama?
Well, if they know where
maybe
he is,
next
they're probably
October.
I was just going to say they're probably going to wait till October to pick him up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Anyway, I saw this one where all of us like it jumped like 8 to 10 points on an NBC poll about the direction that you think the country is going just because they captured this guy. And what I was getting at is. I think this really points out, I've been thinking about this for a while, there's a problem with our education system. Because the people people in this country, it seems a majority of people in this country, don't think logically.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
and,
I agree.
You know, and I think it goes back to our education system. All this testing stuff, this No Child Left Behind that Bush is
trying. Yeah, we're not teaching critical thinking skills. Instead, we're just teaching rote memory. And so people respond to the last thing that they heard.
Thing is, when you check on voting habits, the higher educated the person, the more liberal and progressive they vote.
Yeah.
And that's been, when you go through voting patterns, that's been forever.
Yeah. Back to the American Revolution, certainly, yes.
So I think that's where our problem is, and something's got to be done about the education. It's probably our number one issue. It's the reason we have the problems we have, because the people in this country, even though we have resources, we don't have the education.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge, Kevin. We need to start paying our teachers as if they were the professionals that they are, and paying them very, very well, and turning teaching and giving them the power and the authority and the ability to actually run a classroom, and get the federal government out of this. Thanks, Kevin, for the call. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Hi, this is Bill Wellner, Chief Engineer for the IE America Radio Network, wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Climate change is more than a global environmental issue. It's also a matter of justice, according to a Michigan scholar. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Environmental problems hit harder at the poor and people of color. University of Michigan social scientist Bunyan Bryant says global climate change might become the greatest cause of environmental injustice.
That's going to affect a lot of people. It's going to affect a lot of people in this country because people will be migrating from coastal areas that's flooded out. In other areas, there'll be droughts. Tropical diseases will be moving north. People will be moving across geopolitical boundaries across the world. And it's going to cause regional conflicts. And so the greatest environmental justice of it all is global warming.
Bryant says the pattern will be the same across the planet, with coastal areas and politically unstable nations most affected by global warming. Bryant claims the United States, the world's biggest emitter of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, is committing an act of environmental racism.
Environmental racism is an extension of racism. It has to do with various decisions and policies and rules and regulations that result in the disproportionate impact of environmental hazards on people of color.
Bryant says developing countries are too poor to deal with the droughts, floods, and rising sea levels that could result from climate change.
We have to remember that there are people in this world that are in desperate need. I mean, they can just barely eke out a living.
Bryant says it's a form of injustice for the United States to create pollution that places a greater burden on the world's poorest people. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if
you
don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Yeah.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it. Stop surfing and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I ain't lived forever, but I've lived enough. And I've learned to be gentle, and I've learned to be tough. I found only two things that last till the end. One is your heroes, the other's your friends. Your heroes will help you find good in yourself. Your friends won't forsake you for somebody else. They'll both stand beside you through thick and through thin. That's how it goes with heroes and friends.
Welcome. This is Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman Program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Live on the IE America Radio Network. One of the folks in our chat room just pointed me to this. This is the UC Berkeley press release that caused such an explosion when it came out back in July. All the cons were on the radio and TV going, oh my God, oh my goodness, how can they say that? They can't do it, they can't. Where four researchers who called through 50 years of research literature about the psychology of conservatism report that at the core of political conservatism is the resistance to change and a tolerance for inequality. Actually, I mean, all they have to do is read Russell Kirk's 1952 or 53 or 54 book, Mind of the Conservative, that invented the modern conservative movement and said that there should be a caste or class system in America. Anyhow, tolerance for inequality, and that some of the common psychological factors linked to political conservatism include, number one, fear and aggression. And, I mean, this is what, Bush has been playing this like a violin. Look at 9/11. Feel afraid. Now, let's get aggressive. Yes. Number two, dogmatism and intolerance of ambiguity. In other words, it's got to be our way, this one way. You're either good or you're evil. You're either with us or you're against us. There's only one way. It's the right way. This is it. And it's not possible that there could be nuance. It's not possible that there could be multiple ways of looking at things. It's not possible that, you know, in the conservative worldview, it's a very unipolar worldview. Number three, uncertainty avoidance. Let's avoid uncertainty. We have to be absolutely certain of everything. And if we don't know, we're certain nonetheless. And number four, a need for cognitive closure, which I'd say is a variation on number three. And number four, terror management, which is a variation on number one, fear and aggression. And that's, there you go, there you have it. And thank you very much. Let's see, who was it who had suggested that I catch that? It was, I can't read your name on the air, I'm sorry. But thanks for one of the folks in our 1B in our chat room for that link. That was a good one. Back to the oil and gas. I really want to do this. Why do the cons allow the oil industry to control our government? And the answer in short form is that crony feudalists have taken over our government. That you know, crony, it's not just crony capitalism anymore. It's crony feudalism. Feudalism is one of the three historic forms of governance that existed in the world among what were called civilized people prior to the advent of democracy. Feudalism could more correctly be called rule by the rich. You had rule by warlords, those were called kingdoms. You had rule by people who said God told them to do it. Those were called theocracies, like the Vatican during the Crusades. And you had rule by the rich, and it was called feudalism. When feudalism became pretty much official as a form of governance, was in, as I recall, 1215, when the Magna Carta was signed. And it was, the Magna Carta was not King John giving rights to average people in Great Britain. The Magna Carta was King John acknowledging the rights of the feudal lords. In other words, the feudal lords, the local rich, had reached a point in power where the king had to acknowledge them and say, in some levels, in some areas, we have some levels of equality. But the serfs were still the serfs. And this is the core of conservative philosophy, is a return to feudalism. This is the conservative agenda. Cheap labor, destroy the unions, build up cheap labor, and keep people in terror so that they're not going to ask for more, and create a working poor class, not a middle class. See, a middle class will ask for things like fairness. They'll suggest things like the civil service system or the military pay system or the university pay system, where the person at the very top never makes more than 20 times what the person at the very bottom makes. I mean, this was pretty much the convention in America right up, from 227 years ago up until the time of Ronald Reagan. It was very rare that anybody at the top made more than 50 times what somebody at the bottom made. Just common sense dictated against it. How could anybody work 50 times harder? How could anybody be 50 times smarter? How could a human being be 50 times more valuable? Maybe the rare exception. Maybe the Thomas Edison, the occasional true genius. Although I'd be amazed if Thomas Edison made 50 times more than his workers, or his other engineers, certainly. They were very well paid. Anyhow, here we have this No Lobbyists Left Behind Act. And what John McCain calls it that. It's called the Energy Bill. This started out with Dick Cheney meeting with a bunch of guys from the energy industry in secret. And then the Republicans in the House and Senate met in secret and drafted this thing. And it has some really interesting little provisions. Here's one. This is the one that particularly infuriates me. The elimination of royalty payments for oil wells on public lands. What that means is, public lands is land that you and I own. Right? You and I, we pay our tax dollars to pay the cost of maintaining and owning and not getting taxes on the ownership of public lands. In other words, if Yosemite was owned by private individuals, they'd be paying property taxes on it. So we're all agreeing to forego collecting those property taxes. We will pay them instead in order to have those public lands, because there is considerable value to us, to we the people, in there being public lands in the United States. There's been a consensus about this to some extent since Jefferson, but Teddy Roosevelt was the huge advocate of this stuff. And I think everybody agrees. National parks, public lands, these are good things. And we own them, you and me, literally. A democratic republic, a constitutionally limited democratic republic, a democracy, we the people own the government, and anything the government owns, we own. We paid for it. And so we have a bunch of land. We have a bunch of land up in Alaska. We have a bunch of land out west. We have a bunch of land in the Midwest. We have land here in Vermont. There are national forests and public lands all over the country. And the deal has been, historically, that if a private company wants to come in and take something from our public lands, they have to reimburse us. If they want to take our trees, they have to pay us a royalty on those trees. If they want to take our silver, our gold from under the ground, they have to pay a fee for that, a royalty on that. If they want to pump our oil out from underneath of our public lands, they have to pay a royalty on that. If that oil is worth, if they're going to be able to sell that oil for $30 a barrel, they ought to pay us whatever. Whatever they negotiate, whatever we all agree to, $1 a barrel, $5 a barrel, $10 a barrel, whatever their extraction costs are, plus value minus profit, they should be paying us. And this energy bill eliminates royalty payments on oil extracted from federal lands. In other words, the oil companies can suck up our oil and sell it on the open market and not pay us a penny. And you wonder about welfare mothers. I mean, this is, we're talking billions of dollars. This makes all the human, just this one provision makes all the human welfare going on in the United States look like a drop in the bucket. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you would like to call on this or other topics, here we are. It's 17 minutes before the hour at 3 o'clock on the Tom Hartman program. And Tim in Vermont is on the line. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Tim, what's up?
Well, my power just went out. No, that's the way it works.
Your phone's still working.
No, my phone is working because it went out a little earlier and I plugged the other phone in so that my machine isn't hooked up to it. So it's just a straight old phone, you know?
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you live out in the country in Vermont. We got a generator hooked up to our house here a couple of weeks ago in case the power went out here.
Yeah, I have one too. I haven't gone out to fire it up yet. Got to do that. That's not what I called about. Just real quickly, you made a comment about education, and one of the things that you said, which I don't think is quite what you believe, but I think what you said was we got to get the federal government out of education.
I think that having the federal government setting standards for education is a terrible mistake. I really do.
Yeah, I'm going to take issue with that.
Okay.
And here's why. If you look at European schools, if you look at a textbook, for instance, for a high school textbook for woodworking, which they actually have in Europe, you will find the same textbook in Sweden and Denmark and Germany. And that's because, in fact, some standards have been decided. And if you look at that textbook, it's full of fairly difficult math and science. So in those circumstances, what happens is not only are children getting an education that provides them with critical thinking, it also provides them with the kind of skills that will let them do something besides work at McDonald's. So basically what they've done is they've made a decision. They've made a decision, and it's actually a sort of an old-fashioned decision that we made here, too, that some take issue with, and that is that there's some connection between what we do for a livelihood and what ought to be happening in our schools.
Well, you make a really good point, Tim.
Yeah.
You make a really good point. Now, here's the flip side of that, and that is that with the cons in charge, we now have a situation where the curriculum of many of our schools in the United States is determined by a bunch of right-wing conservative Christians in Texas. The textbooks have to, because Texas is the largest purchaser of school books in the United States, no publisher is willing to take the risk of publishing a book that won't be vetted by the Texas Boards of Education. And that's why, you know, where they are taking evolution out of the textbooks and presenting it as a theory. They are putting creationism into textbooks. They're censoring and dumbing down our education in large part because of this. Well, I guess that isn't federal. The federal standards, yeah. Anyhow, okay, you make a good point. You're changing my mind.
So, you know, I mean, basically one of the things we want to do here is to make sure that, you know, if a right to an education is, as you call it, one of the commons, ends up being sort of a part of the commons, then we need to really, obviously, to protect that from being politicized, which is what you're talking about. The other thing is, though, we need to protect it from being privatized.
Well, here's the third end of it, though, and this is where I'm coming from, and that is that education is a very local thing. Education ultimately is about my kid getting the education that I want him or her to have.
Right.
And I have no problem with the federal government tossing money into the pot.
Right.
But, and in fact, I think it's probably a good idea to a certain extent. But if local control over education goes away, I'm concerned that local participation in education is going to diminish. I'm concerned that, you know, it just doesn't seem like a good idea to me. For example, Montessori schools are the same all over the United States, but they're all different.
Mm-hmm.
Waldorf schools are the same all over the United States, but they're all different. There are basic principles that are adhered to that have to do with their philosophy of education. But every school, and I've visited a lot of both of these kinds of schools, and every school is absolutely unique from all the others. There are things that you can bring into it. So there is a a kind of a national structure that has to do with philosophy, but that's really more like, here's the support we're offering.
Right. Right.
In terms of the, here's what you must rise to, here's the standards you must meet, those are always defined at the local level.
Yeah, well, I think that one of the things that's happened, you know, I think if you look at that European model, what you find is that you've got local communities and you've got labor unions and you've got, you know, local businesses and you've got teachers and parents and the government all designing these curriculums as yeah. opposed to having just the government set up standards. And, you know, yeah. I'm just saying, you know, I think that if we're going to make anything in this country ever again, we have to have people who know how to do it. And, you know, the average American high school kid has no idea what a CNC machine is. If you ask the average European kid, he not only knows what it is, he knows how to use it. And, you know, that's he may choose not to use it, but nonetheless, he's got a skill that's in front of him that's usable. And I think, you know, we've decided that we're not going to do that. And there's certainly no commitment to that at a higher level, which there needs to be. Somebody in the government needs to say, you know, we're committed to this, and, you know, we're going to throw money at it and do it and try to compete.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But on the other hand, what has happened is that the federal, you know, with the No Child Left Behind Act, which is a huge increase in federal intrusion into local school districts, basically they're going in and saying, you know, here's a test that our corporate crony test-making companies are going to sell to you for $35 a kid, even though it costs them 5 cents a copy to print. And you have to buy this test, and your kids have to score a certain way on this test. And this is, and so you get to teach to the test, and forget about critical thinking skills, and forget about local issues, and forget about, you know, all those things. This is it. And that kind of federal involvement in education is a disaster.
And on top of that, they didn't give anybody any money for it. So they're squeezing
right.
all the
yeah,
states.
Yeah, it's an unfunded mandate.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we agree. It's just that
how do we get to it?
Yeah, how do we get to it? And, you know, how do we keep this movement, this constant movement toward privatization from happening to the things that are really important to us as a nation, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, excellent point, Tim. Thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate it. It certainly is a more complex issue than it can be handled in a slogan, as so often so many things are. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen. For the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Wish I could watch some TV, if only my couch wasn't 43,000 feet away.
When you're in bed with the flu, the smallest distance can seem impossible.
If only the medicine cabinet wasn't way across the state line.
If only. If only you had the strength. You need Advil Flu and Body Ache. The power of Advil so nothing works harder on body aches, headaches, and fever. Plus a hard-working decongestant. Makes having the flu a lot more comfortable.
Now, if only I had a plasma TV.
Fight the flu with Advil Flu and Body Ache. Use as directed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
Tom Hartman Show.
Yeah, we're going to catch him doing something right. Senator Bob Graham of Florida said today that he will file a bill to prohibit charging service members for meals while they are hospitalized as a result of injuries or illnesses suffered while in combat or training for combat. Graham says, how can we justify spending billions of dollars on no-bid contracts to rebuild Iraq, then turn around and charge an injured soldier $8.10 a day for meals while he's being treated for war injuries? Marine Staff Sergeant Bill Merwin of Nevada. He was billed $243 for his meals while he was in the hospital because his foot got blown off in Iraq. Ain't privatization wonderful? So Bob Graham says he's going to put into Congress a law saying no more. It's against the law to charge service members for their meals. Thank you, Bob Graham. Well done.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month, you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Merry Christmas, baby. You should just treat me nice.
Welcome back. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, happy holidays.
Merry Christmas, baby.
The top recipients of oil and natural gas industry contributions, 1997 to 2003. Number one, George W. Bush. Number two, Don Young, Representative Don Young, Republican of Alaska. Number three, Representative Joe Barton, Republican of Texas. Number four, Senator Mary Landrieu, Democrat of Louisiana. Number five, Representative Tom DeLay, a Republican of Texas. And Billy Towson is down there at number eight, Republican of Louisiana. The contributors, number one, Chevron Texaco, $4,170,000. ExxonMobil, number two, $3 million. Condoleezza Rice's former employer, $3,136,000. And then it goes to ConocoPhillips, Occidental Petroleum. Halliburton gave $1,234,000, and so on. Kerr McGee, Marathon Oil, FMC, Sunoco. Mike in Florida has some thoughts on this. Mike, welcome to the last few minutes here of the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom, this is Mike in Florida. Real quickly about liberals and conservatives. I know a lot of people always say as far as contributing to campaigns that they call the limousine liberals that don't like to contribute. I think a lot of reason behind that why conservatives give, they give more so as an investment versus liberals given to mainly just better society or the environment.
Absolutely. And, absolutely, because the core philosophy of conservatives is that business does everything better. And so, I mean, George Bush said we're going to run the nation like a business. I mean, that's a disaster.
Which ties in a little to my second thing versus liberals and conservatives in the media, why it's tougher for the conservatives, because the conservatives are more corporate-oriented, therefore it's easier to get the corporate advertisers to back them, versus liberals are more for, you know, regulating and keeping a watch on them. And I think that makes it a little bit tougher for liberal
could,
talk radio.
Could be, but, you know, our program is brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com, and the Newsletter Factory, newsletterfactory.com. And those are all companies that intentionally are advertising and supporting this program because of our positions. And so I think that there are a lot of progressive companies out there, companies that want to reach the marketplace that we're talking to. And, you know, those kind of things will change. By the way, thanks, Mike, for the call. Somebody has called and asked if I wrote a book that's about Thomas Edison. Yes, I wrote a book called The Edison Gene, and you can find it in any bookstore, Amazon, and so on. Thanks very much to Shar Jones for engineering our program today. Thanks for Brad Walrod in New York for editing our music, to Louise Hartman for producing the program, to the wonderful folks who participated in our chat room today. It's been a great day. Thanks for joining us. Tune in tomorrow. Same time, same place. This is Square. See you tomorrow.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
Well, the ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.